This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 12th of February, 2021. Hello, and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we will be reading extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, and I'm joined this week by Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Who will help me read through the various items from this week's Hampshire Chronicle. Now, our editors would normally be Liz and Gordon Legg. However, Liz was feeling unwell yesterday when they would have been editing. Nothing serious, we understand. So Ros and I have edited this week's edition. Well, first, our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now, just to remind you, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And if you're having problems with the box which you have been playing the recording, please make sure that you've plugged it into the mains and it is fully charged. For those of you with computers or tablets, I'm sure you know that as well as using the memory stick, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Or you can either listen to it off the website or download the recording to listen to later. We can even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. So we start off, as usual, with this week's headlines. The first one is COVID-19 outbreak strikes city prison, followed by a local celeb backs calls for Captain Tom's statue. Then there's mass testing gets set for rollout. And finally, school set to admit girls for the first time. So, Ros, could we have the first headline story, please?
Yes, you can, and it's about COVID, unsurprisingly. But this is an outbreak that strikes the city prison. An explosion of COVID cases at Winchester Prison has turned part of the city into one of the UK's worst COVID hotspots. There were 78 prisoners and 22 staff members who had the virus on Monday, with 87 inmates and 18 employees isolating due to showing symptoms or being contacted by track and trace. It was unclear whether any sufferers are or have been seriously ill, but it raises the question of what to do with inmates being released into the community at the end of their sentences. According to government statistics, the Winchester West area comprising Week and Fulford has a rolling rate of cases, a rolling rate of cases of 668 per 100,000. And that's probably the highest of the, in the country. A spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice said that the precautionary measures are being put in place at the Romsey Road prison. Our priority is to limit the state of the virus and protect the lives of those who have been working in our prisons. We have taken precautions of measures of Winchester in line with public health guidance and will continue to closely monitor the situation. Sarah Rigby, South West representative of the Prison Officers Association, said there are the usual processes in place to try and protect staff and prisoners, masks, social distancing and PPE. The nature of Winchester Prison, with its very narrow landings, makes social distancing extremely difficult, and the added pressure of being a local prison also makes things difficult. Winchester is also a Category B local prison with a high number of inmates coming in and being released every day. Ms. Rigby added, as long as courts continue to operate, prisons will continue to receive prisoners, and a number of prison transfers must take place to ensure the spaces at the local prisons remain available for the courts. They added that the prison workers should be prioritised for the vaccine. Ms. Rigby of the POA added, at least then they and their families are afforded a level of protection. They have worked on the front line throughout this pandemic, putting themselves at risk every time they walk through the gate. All prisons should be running a very restricted regime, but we would also be in favour of a 14-day circuit breaker lockdown in establishments such as Winchester in an attempt to bring this outbreak under control. No transfers in or out, and all prisoners to remain in their cells with a minimum regime offered. The reason for the high number of cases in Winchester West has been baffling many people. COVID rates have been falling across most of this district for several weeks. The rate in adjacent Oliver's Battery and Hursley area dropped to below 3. The Chronicle has been reporting on the new hotspot in Winchester West for several days, since it emerged just before the weekend. People posting on the Chronicle website suggested explanations could be the area's proximity to the railway station or cases in local care homes. The release of inmates from a hotspot back into local communities creates the likelihood of a transmission of cases.
Thank you. Well, the next item is headed Local Celeb Backs Calls for Captain Tom Statue. Amanda Holden has started a petition calling for a statue of Captain Sir Tom Moore to be erected outside Parliament. The Britain's Got Talent judge, who grew up in Bishop's Waltham, was among those paying tribute to the fundraising veteran following his death, aged 100, on Tuesday last, after testing positive for coronavirus. Writing on the Change.org website, she describes Sir Tom as a national hero who has brought us all together and shone so much light in such a dark time. Holden continued, let's show generations to come what it was to be brave, courageous and spirited with the statue of Captain Sir Tom Moore outside the Houses of Parliament forevermore. Join me and Heart Breakfast to sign this petition to get things moving. More than 650 people have put their name to the petition, which is addressed to the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, and aims to reach 1,000 signatures. Holden said on Wednesday morning that listeners to her Heart Breakfast show had been calling for a statue of Sir Tom to be erected. There have been widespread calls for a statue commemorating Sir Tom, who raised more than £32 million for the NHS by walking laps of his garden. For more details of the petition, you can visit, this is a catchy little website, www.change.org/p/Boris-Johnson-A-Statue-4-National-Hero-Captain-Sir-Tom-Moore. Now, I'm sure you've memorised that by now.
This next item I've got is headed Mass Testing Gets Set for Rollout. Further details of a coronavirus mass testing programme have been unveiled, as it could be rolled out across Hampshire in the following weeks. Up to 11 testing centres to identify asymptomatic residents could be set up across the country. It comes as Hampshire County Council has already submitted a bid to central government for a centre in the Rushmoor district. Now the authority has revealed that a centre could be set up in each of the Hampshire districts. As reported, if successful, transport workers, childminders, retail staff, construction and maintenance workers, as well as volunteers, could have access to the rapid lateral flow tests. Those who test positive will be asked to self-isolate and take a PCR test. New documents published by the County Council have revealed that, subject to approval, the sites could go live the week beginning February the 22nd. The location of the sites is yet to be revealed. But according to the authority, the proposed sites include a number of libraries and leisure centres across Hampshire. A council report discussed by councillors on Monday afternoon reads, those eligible for this programme would be invited to undertake lateral flow testing twice a week with a 3 to 5 day gap in a 7 day period. All sites would run between 6 and 7 days per week, with operational hours allowing for variation in working patterns across critical workers. The capacity of the testing sites will depend on their size. The council said an example from the government guidance states that a medium testing site with 11 testing booths will be able to see 880 people per day. The size of the sites and the number of booths varies across each of the districts, the council said. According to official documents of the 11 sites being proposed for Hampshire 8, eight are owned on or leased by district councils, and three, all libraries, are owned by the county council. Simon Bryant, the director of public health at the county council, said that the authority is working at pace. Talking about the scheme, Councillor Judith Grzywski, cabinet member for health, said, I think the benefits outweigh the risks. I think this is one more opportunity to trace contacts in our effort to stop the spread of COVID. The council previously said it hopes to hear back from the government by mid-February.
Right, the last headline story. Now, I think you need to prepare yourselves for this. This is a very shocking headline.
Oh, dear.
School set to admit girls for the first time.
Oh.
Winchester College is to overturn centuries of tradition by taking girl pupils for the first time, it's announced this week. The 700 pupil private school is to admit girls and day pupils into the sixth form as part of what it calls a wider modernisation agenda. Alumni, parents, staff, boys and future parents will be consulted on how best to implement the changes. The school, where fees are around £42,000 a year, announced, Winchester College in the 21st century, a new vision and a major programme of change. The governing body says it is confident that the changes will enable the school to continue its unique approach to education. The changes include admission of girls and day pupils into the sixth form from 2022 and girl boarders from 2024, a growth in the school's bursary provision with initial objective of a 25% increase from 120 to 150 pupils by 2024. Expansion of the school's online learning to provide greater opportunities for collaboration with the maintained sector. It has been one of only four all-boy boarding schools left in the country. Warden Sir Richard Stagg, Chairman of Governors, said, we are determined that Winchester, which led the way when it was founded almost 640 years ago, continues to be a leader and influencer of great education on the modern global stage. These changes represent an exciting new phase in Winchester's history, which will bring multiple benefits to current and future generations of Wykhamists. Headmaster Dr. Tim Hand said, today's announcement are the products of discussions over many years, and I'm delighted to take them forward. Our founder, William of Wykeham, was a philanthropist and visionary who revolutionised education, and it's his tradition of looking ahead that we seek to continue. Mr. Hands told the Times that current parents were around 2-1 in favour of mixed-sex sixth forms. Some opposed the idea, believing all male communities to be precious, but those in favour wanted equal treatment for their daughters. There are only 3 other all-boys boarding schools, Eton, Harrow and Radley, near Oxford. Right, well, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, and then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, opinion by George Hayter, Belgarum, letter from Westminster, and lighting up times. So here we have the death notices, please.
Yes, the first is Beau, Janet Elizabeth Beau, née Marsh, also known as Janet Amos and Janet Thomas. Aged 77, passed away at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 23rd of January, after a short illness.
Burnfield, Alexander John Sandy Burnfield, passed away on the 22nd of January, aged 76.
Carden, Shona Carden. The family is sad to announce her sudden and unexpected death. Aged 86, on the 4th of February.
Gawthorpe, Sheila Mary Grant Gawthorpe, formerly of Twyford and Edinburgh. Died peacefully on the 3rd of February, aged 97 years.
Jackson, Virginia, Ginny, Nanny G, Jackson of Old Orsford. Passed away peacefully on the 30th of January, aged 83.
Lane, Phyllis Selina Lane, née Orman, widow of Albert Eugene Ted Lane. She passed away on the 2nd of February, aged 98, in Netley Court Care Home.
Mace, Albert William Burt Mace, passed away peacefully, aged 96.
Macy, Joyce Macy, passed away in hospital on the 27th of January.
Roskilly, Ian Roskilly, passed away on the 6th of February at Queen Alexandra Hospital.
Turnbull, Edna Agnes May Turnbull, née Sedgman, after a short illness, passed away peacefully, aged 92.
Young, Margaret Joyce Young, passed away at home in Winchester on the 6th of February, aged 98.
And now we have Christian comment. Ros, please.
Yes, Casablanca, Friendship and Loss. And this article is contributed by Rosemary Baker. For many years, I've struggled with quizzes, be they on television or live events, because I've never seen the film Casablanca. The questions come up so often. Of course, it was made before I was born, and we didn't have a television until my teens, and since then, I have never seemed to have the time on my own to watch an old black and white movie. Well, that opportunity came up during our current lockdown, and I watched it, albeit in 3 stints, which you can do if you have the ability to record. It was dated, but actually, I quite enjoyed it. I pressed delete, hoping that I could remember enough for future quizzes. Well, I thought no more about it until the Zoom conference for ministers I mentioned last time. I was idling through the bookshop line when in Resources for Lent I saw A Beautiful Friendship, a Lent course on Casablanca. So I bought it with a few other trifles. In the introduction it says that it offers a fresh perspective on one of the classic movies of all time. Casablanca has been well known with its lines and scenes, but it also deals with powerful themes of love, loss, faith and sacrifice that can help us reflect on the message at the Gospel of Lent. So Lent begins on Ash Wednesday, 17th of February. Christians traditionally used to give things up for Lent, mirroring Jesus' experience in the wilderness. Then it became a fashionable thing to do, something positive to make a difference. Also, these two things can be combined, for instance, giving away clothes, etc., to good causes. Alongside these actions, we have also been encouraged to read and study spiritual material. Many resources are available on the internet, or you can buy something, as I have done. Reflecting on friendship and loss will be a very relevant item for me, as I have just lost two friends. One was approaching her 80th birthday and was very ill, and we had been friends for 40 or so years. The second I had only known for a few years by comparison, and she was in her early 60s. She died suddenly in her sleep. There are many examples of friendship in the Bible, both Old and New Testaments, as well as teaching on it. By studying friendship in the film Casablanca, the authors hope to help people deepen their relationship with God through his son, Jesus, and his sacrificial giving of his life. The film is about a love triangle set among refugees in Casablanca in the Second World War. They're trying to escape the Germans. The hero gives his two forged exit visas to his former lover and her husband so they can escape. Jesus asked us to love our friends as he loves us. And that was Rosemary A. Baker.
Now we move on to letters to the editor. A real mixed bag this week, except the first four are about the first subject, which was an item from last week's Hampshire Chronicle about the house which is next to the Cheswell Theatre. And Belgarum was asking if anybody knew anything about its history. Well, at least four people did. So we'll continue with those. So the first letter is from Trevor Bignall. Sir, your heading, Victorian House Doomed, Chronicle Belgarum, February the 4th, revived memories of the former owners of the property, who were A. E. Early and Son, coal merchants. I think they had run their business from this property as far back as the 1900s. The coal yard was located in the old Bar End Goods Yard. The last members of the Early family retired in possibly the 1980s. The stables in the yard at the rear housed the horses that pulled the coal carts around Winchester. In later years, the family kept their lorries in the yard. I have personal memories of the property, as for many years, from the 1960s, I had a fruit and vegetable delivery round in Winchester, and my first call was to the Earleys before moving on to the Winnell estate. I can remember the invoice address for the company, A. E. Early and Son, Cheese Hill Street. That's the old spelling, Cheese Hill. And that was written by Trevor Bignall, Hazelgrove, Bishop Waltham. And the next letter is written by Margaret Mason. Sir, the request for information about this beautiful but derelict building caught my eye in this week's Hampshire Chronicle. In the 1970s, this was a coal merchant's yard run by Mrs. Early, a lovely Scots lady. She lived in the house, and we would go round and order our coal from the door in the side of the gates. The coal would be bagged up along the wall on the Cheswell Rectory side, and there were sheds with lorries and more coal stored. It may have been a Corrals outlet, but I can't remember that. We used to love going to see Mrs. Early and ordering our coal with the children in their pram. There was something very oldie-worldy and pleasant about the place. Sad to hear it's going to be demolished. It's written by Margaret Mason of Water Lane, Winchester. And the third letter on the subject is written by Tim James. Sir, I read with interest Bell Garum's article about the property next to the Chesil Theatre in Chesil Street. Certainly in the late 1970s, early 80s, the property was owned by the local coal merchant A.E. Early. I recall visiting the office there with my mother, who would pay her monthly coal bill there. The office contains some beautiful antique furniture. The rear yard, of course, housed the coal heaps and probably stables, as I've seen pictures of horse-drawn carts owned by the company doing their rounds. That was written by Tim James, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
And I And I have the fourth and arguably the most interesting letter here on Early's Cold. So in response to your article, Victorian House Doomed, Chronicle Bulgarum, February the 4th, as the great-grandson of the original householder, I can offer you the following information. My great-grandfather, Alfred Herbert Early, had the three-bedroom, two-storey house and separate four-stall stable block built in 1902 to run his coal merchant, car man and furniture removal business. The coal was stored at the rear of the site. The family business continued just as coal and coke merchants with my grandfather, Alfred Early, and later my uncle, Ronald Edward Early, and my father, Gerald John Early. At this time, coal was delivered to the railway goods yard at Bar End. Petrol-driven lorries had taken over from horse-drawn carts, so the stables were used to shelter the cars whilst the delivery lorries were housed in a covered structure at the rear of the property, backing onto the river. I have a copy of a photograph which features the horse-drawn coal carts and their drivers together with a covered removal cart in front of four railway coal wagons, all with an Early livery. It was then, before the First World War, and I believe most of the men went on to fight and the horses were commandeered. The photograph hung for many years in the office, where various types of coal were on display. The property was sold in 1985-86, when my uncle and father retired, and A.E. Early and Sons Coal Merchants business ceased to trade. And that came from Robert John Early, who lives in South Wanston.
The next letter is written by Helen Bleo, and it's headed Five Bridges Bog. Sir, please could you print a plea for a kind builder or farmer or someone to lay some planking on patches of Five Bridges Road just so that more people can access this walk again? In past weeks, a couple of short stretches have become so increasingly wet and muddy that it's almost impossible to cover the length of the road without Wellington boots. At one point, people have obviously braved the brambles and trodden widening paths along the edges of the road, but the verges in turn have now become excessively muddy and slippery. I nearly lost my footing there this morning. Many more of us are out walking to get some fresh air and exercise during this lockdown. It would be greatly appreciated if we could more easily access Five Bridges Road again. That was written by Helen Bleo, Marston Gate, Hyde, Winchester.
And Helen Bleo, of course, is a Chesil friend, Chesil Theatre friend. And this letter comes from another Chesil Theatre friend. It's Heather Bradford of Hairstock Road, Hairstock. And she writes, Parish Thanks. Sir, I write to express my thanks for all the hard work and effort that the Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council must have expended in helping to prevent the building of inert materials recycling planted Three Maids Hill. The verdict is a great relief to me and very much appreciated. And that's Chronicle, January the 20th. She goes on, what has surprised me, though, is that the narrow margin of the rejection of the proposals, 6 for it and 8 against, with 2 abstentions, a narrow victory. I'm also surprised that the planning officers supported the enterprise. I thought, quite simply and naively, that this proposal would be needed more rejected more or less unanimously. I'm not an expert on the workings of local government when planning is concerned, especially at county level. But I think it is very unsettling that none of the county councillors who voted for the plant live in Winchester or represent any of its residents, let alone those of Littleton, Hairstock or the contiguous parishes and wards. That is why I'm writing this letter, not just to say thank you, but also to express my gratitude to the parish council and to everyone who objected to the scheme. Hopefully, the land at Three Maids Hill will remain free of any toxic, environmentally dubious active agents in perpetuity. And that, as I said, was from Heather Bradford of Hairstock.
Hugh Lambie writes, Protection. Sir, standing up for our beautiful countryside and its residents has never been more important. Threats include untrammelled housing developments and unauthorised traveller encampments. The Countryside Charity, CPRE, has suggested creating a new green belt to the south of Winchester, which would give greater protection for the countryside. Unfortunately, this has been pushed into the long grass by the Liberal Democrat administration, with nothing more heard of this excellent idea. We would like to see protections for our valued landscapes all round Winchester. Conservative councillors have recently proposed that brownfield sites be given priority for new developments in the district. This must be right. And so it was a shame that the Lib Dems unanimously voted to block the idea. At the request of the Southern Parishes, I proposed a motion calling for enhanced police powers to deal with unauthorised encampments. Many will understand the unease, fear and intimidation that these cause residents. New offences would give the police the power to act immediately and incentivise travellers to use authorised sites only, which is what 95% of the travellers already do. It would save the council money and provide greater protection to our residents. Sadly, the Lib Dems, as one, also voted down this proposal. Fortunately, help is at hand from the government on the unauthorised traveller sites. A draft bill giving the police the sort of powers we called for is to be published this month. But the message is clear for those of us who live in rural areas. That was written by Hugh Lambie, Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council, High Street, Meonstoke.
David Campbell writes on public service. Sir, whilst I appreciate that I am only paying £3,000 a year to our Winchester Council, today's glass collection operative took his time to take a photo of my excess, i.e. 6, extra bottles that did not fit into the black plastic box. Thinking that if there were a separate basket, it would be easier for the dear chap to load. When challenged, he told me there are plenty of recycling areas around. I appreciate that they're doing a great public service for us out of my £3,000. But why does the council arm these Jobsworth with cameras and tell them not to collect a few bits of extra glass? I think we should be told. For all, we are not meant to take our cars out for needless trips whilst in lockdown. That's David Campbell protesting there, and he's of Berwick Way, Week, Winchester.
A letter from Karen Barrett next, and it's headed Cuba Bound. Sir, I must congratulate Sir George Hollingbury on his appointment as British ambassador to Cuba. Chronicle, February 4th. Quite a shock, I must admit. In fact, given my comparable lack of diplomatic experience, I wish I'd applied for the job myself. Seriously, though, I expect him to use any skills acquired as a minister at the Department for International Trade to develop a productive relationship with the Cuban government. I would also hope his experience of rough and tumble at Alresford Town Council will equip him to withstand any pressure from his US counterparts. Maybe by the time he takes up his post, President Biden will have removed Cuba from Trump's last gasp terrorist list, ending the US blockade and closing down Guantanamo Bay. Or then again, maybe not. In the meantime, if George is not too busy brushing up his Cuban Spanish and honing his mojito-making skills, he should get in touch with the Cuba Solidarity Campaign to request a briefing to balance those he's likely to get from the Foreign Office. That was written by Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
This heading is Shop Memories, and it comes from Margaret Grant. She says, "Sir, here's another assault on your memories of Winchester's life and commerce. Think of Margaret Croft's shop in Jury Street, with its large window giving full view of the many colourful goods available. The glass-topped counter showed off embroidery and tapestry packs, etc., along with cabinets of stranded cottons and tapestry wools of every colour. There were folders of patterns and colour swatches to make anything and everything. They bolstered always by Miss Croft's good advice. On most floors of the premises, yarns of all colours, textures and brands were stacked from floor to ceiling. These included cobweb wool for the finest work to the thickest of yarns and skeins to be separated and retwisted. Quite a job of stock-taking times. The sellers with chill and cobwebs had put buys in them, wool kept for customers to buy over an allotted rhyme to suit their purses. I was led to believe that behind the racks large iron rings were in the wall, perhaps a relic of the women's prison. Maybe this had a little bit of poetic license, because I didn't meet any ghosts down there. Elsewhere, canvas for rugs, thrums and tapestry among with linens and tools for every craft were kept along with gold and silver threads for altar cloths and vestments embroidered by a Miss E and mini dresses crocheted by Miss S for the rich and famous. The stairs were quite a challenge for the staff in more ways than one. No elfin safety then. Oops! Oh, me be Hampshire sometimes writing, I say it is. Entertaining piece was from Margaret Grant of Burriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester. Thank you, Margaret.
In a Hampshire accent, sort of, as well.
Well, it was. I wasn't quite sure.
No. Okay. Justin Kay writes the next letter, which is headed COVID and Shops. Sir, retail outlets in the city should generally be commended for the efforts they are making to help staff and customers feel safe, with most operating either a supervised in-out policy, or in the case of Tesco Express, a traffic light system to show when it's okay to enter. All generally observe social distancing and mask wearing. There is, however, one notable exception. Around a week ago, I dropped into Iceland and within seconds was confronted by a woman shopper coughing without a mask. A few months ago, I had a similar experience, this time with a staff member coughing, again unmasked. Given the cramped layout of this shop's interior, which makes social distancing difficult, the abject failure to uphold the law on mask wearing is quite inexcusable. Iceland needs to ensure they are worn by all who can wear them, and they should station staff near the door to ensure everyone coming in has one on. Life is quite stressful enough without having to pass a week after entering a store worrying whether one has contracted the virus, all because of its failure to observe the law and simple common sense. Winchester shoppers, you have been warned. And that was written by Justin Kay, Chapel Lane, Otterbourne, Winchester.
Well, shopping is very much a theme here this week. This one is about Debenhams, and it's by Paul Openshaw. So the closure of Debenhams is a big blow for the city, but I wonder if it does not also present an opportunity. Winchester is known, albeit to a lesser extent, now than in the past, for its eclectic mix of small independent shops. The Christmas market has made the city a go-to destination in December. Could Debenhams host a huge number of small booths, all allowing preferably local craftspeople to sell their wares for 12 months of the year? Woodturners, pet portraitists, potters, ceramicists, that's not easy to say, ceramicists, engravers, leather workers, embroiderers, milliners, walking stick makers, bearing in mind the likely customers, and many others under one roof, properly prompted, would surely attract visitors from a wider region to the benefit of our existing shops and restaurants. In the same way as Hay on Wye became the book town, could Winchester become the craft city? And that is asked by Paul Openshaw of White Hart Road, Fair Oak, Eastleigh.
Now, John Tippett Cooper writes, "Extra help. Sir, last month marked the opening of an amazing new initiative called the Community Food Pantry, run by Unit 12, a community interest company in Winnell, featured in the Chronicle January the 28th. The Community Food Pantry is available to everyone and is aimed at helping and encouraging households that need a little bit of support to manage and budget through these tough times. People pay a £5 fee and are able to obtain goods valued at £15 or more. The pantry initiative is designed to support people with food deprivation, helping them to escape or move on from their current emergency or serious financial difficulty with a helping hand approach. Working in partnership with the excellent Winchester Basics Bank, the Community Food Pantry also provides emergency food parcels. The initiative is the brainchild of Elaine Chapman, a community activist and founding member of Winchester Mutual Aid, and Jamie Robinson, the general manager of Unit 12, who is proving to be one of Winchester's most effective community organisers. These are the sort of community champions we should be proud of. Winchester City Council, and in particular Councillor Paula Ferguson and Councillor Jackie Porter, deserve a lot of credit for the support, both financial and advisory, provided to Unit 12 for this initiative, including a grant of £12,500 announced at last week's Cabinet meeting. Despite massive financial pressures following years of central government cuts and the COVID-19 pandemic, it's clear the City Council are prioritising supporting people that need it most. Equally, the people of Winchester, with their generosity in terms of donations of food, money and time, have shown a deep reservoir of kindness and unity in our community. The Community Food Pantry initiative is a perfect example of how a community can work together to support each other. This community-spirited philosophy will be central to our recovery after COVID-19, and it is very reassuring to see our City Council and the citizens of our district are fully in tune with it." That was written by John Tippett Cooper, King Alfred Terrace, Hyde, Winchester. Well, that finishes the letters to the editor. So if you have an opinion on a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836, that is 01962 860836, or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we move on to editorial comment. Ros, please.
Yes, thank you. This time it's headed "School's Ending of a 600-Year Tradition." It is one of those things that comes as a shock, but not a surprise. Winchester College is poised to end more than 600 years of tradition to admit girls, initially into its sixth form. By doing so, it acknowledges that we are now living in the 21st century and not the 19th century of Tom Brown's school days. There will be some, as with the ordination of women priests in the 1990s, who say something special will be lost, the ending of an all-male community. But what was acceptable for the 14th century is no longer so. We did lots of things in the 14th century that no longer seem a good idea. Just because something has been done for 600 years does not necessarily mean it should carry on. No one can be in any doubt that Winchester College is a fine school, giving opportunities to generations of boys, and it is right that its qualities can now be shared by half of the population. The college is mindful, too, of its social obligations and proposes to increase the number of bursary it offers to poorer pupils whose families cannot afford the £42,000 a year fees. That, too, is only right.
Thank you, Ros, for the editorial comment. Now I've got the opinion piece written this week by George Hayter. It's called "Battling the Lockdown Blues." Sticking to lockdown rules means that 1 mile is about as far as I can go, because cars are only allowed for essential journeys and it's too cold for cycling. So, on foot, I have become familiar with every residential road, avenue, close and crescent within my 1 mile universe. And because my only essential travel is fetching food, the only road I have driven on for weeks is the short distance between home and Sainsbury's at Badger Farm. Under this cursed COVID confinement, it is easy to get depressed, so I have been wondering how I can protect my mental health, and I have come up with a plan. There is no scientific basis to my personal strategy, and it would not suit everyone, but for what it's worth, here is my 5-part idea, which has a name. THROGPOP is the acronym of the plan's 5 stages. Talk, help, gratitude, plan and prepare. The T in THROGPOP stands for talk, and that's essentially phoning people. Emailing and texting is okay, but I maintain that a proper lockdown chinwag using your phone to actually talk is tops. A lot of people hesitate to phone these days. They fear they might be intruding, but I find most lockdown prisoners love getting a surprise intrusion from a familiar voice. Compared to prodding buttons on a keypad, phoning feels like putting your arm round someone. Now, the H in THROGPOP is for helping other people. I admit that the joy of helping is not something I have experienced much this lockdown. I have done no delivering of goods to stranded lockdown victims or checked up on my elderly neighbours, but I have made a modest start in helping by phoning and offering my sympathy and support to a relative who is in lockdown alone with 3 young children while her partner is away from home weeks working. The G in THROGPOP stands for gratitude. I am making an effort to be grateful for my good fortune. As well as complaining about the deadly impoverishing virus, I've been remembering how lucky I am just to be alive and how relatively healthy. I have family, friends, food to eat and a habitable home in the country that is peaceful and democratic. To cheer myself up, I can call on warm memories. I can count on having someone who will check that this article makes reasonable sense before I send it to the Cron. I can be grateful to the many people who have ignored or forgiven my tactless blunders and thoughtless behaviour over the years. Well, lockdown doesn't seem so awful when I reflect on how much I have to be grateful for. The first P in Thogpop is for plan. It's my new policy is not just long for lockdown to end, but also to start planning what I will do when it does end, so that I'll be ready to get back into action. Who will you visit? Where will you go? Who will you invite? Planning can bring enjoyable anticipation to the good times. The last letter in Thogpop stands for preparation. That makes arrangements for activities after lockdown ends. My preparations are largely inviting people to do things with me post-lockdown so that we both have a commitment to look forward to. I hope to arrange an outing to a concert here or a picnic there. I've already enjoyed planning an itinerary for a two-day break in Cambridge and Ely once hotels are open again. And I have made preparations for being free to travel into the central Winchester area again. I've prepared a route along Southgate Street round the east end of the cathedral. Then I'll follow the riverside walk by the college playing fields and climb St Catherine's Hill to gaze down on the meadows of this beautiful Itchen Valley. Oh, lockdown is not quite so bleak when you plan ahead. Well, next we have Belgarum, who gives us an alternative view of the news. Ros, please.
Yes. This one's headed Hamlet-like indecision. And I think, unusually this time, I'd like to describe the photograph that I can see that accompanies this interesting article. It is of the Broadway in Winchester. I think it's in 1970. And Arthur is there, looking above all, and at the Guildhall, and the traffic is, well, just accumulating around the base of him. And Hamlet-like indecision was published in 1977, but it could have been written this week. It was penned by Roy Christian in a book called Vanishing Britain, published by David and Charles. Winchester is racked by Hamlet-like indecision. It shares with Bath, if less acutely, a Traverick problem, symbolised, as Leslie Ginsberg and Kenneth Brown put it so aptly in Architectural Review, November 1975, by King Alfred imprisoned on his roundabout opposite Guildhall at the foot of High Street, Winchester. Also has doubts about its future role. Whether to remain a county town, educational centre, shopping centre for the surrounding Itchen Valley villages, with some tourism attraction by Britain's longest cathedral and a wealth of literary and historical association, or to branch out as an ambitious commercial shopping centre, that is the question. Of course, two problems are closely linked. If Winchester goes for growth, it will need to be dressed in the panoply of ring roads, M3 links, the lot. But is this the best option? Is the city big enough to compete with growing Basingstoke and an out-of-town shipping centre at Chandler's Ford? Is it the right place for department stores? Ginsberg and Brown think not. I agree. It perhaps needs more specialist shops and a good art gallery and museum, as they suggest. It probably does not need its proposed ring road, three quarters of a ring to be precise, about which the local authority, under pressure from local conservationist, is having second thoughts. There are too many echoes and irony here for Belgarum to mention. More from Mr. Christian and Vanishing Britain in Belgarum next week.
Well, the second article from Bill Garman's piece is headed "Schools Speedy," in inverted commas, "Decision." Some wheels turn very slowly. A report on the decision of Winchester College to admit girls, and the headmaster has told The Times it has been considering it since the final years of the reign of Queen Victoria. Tim Hand said the school had been discussing the issue for more than 100 years, since 1899. He told the newspaper, "It took 122 years, notably speedy in our terms. I don't mind what your background is. I want to know what you've done with your personality and your opportunities. The school has produced lots of leaders in the past. We're going to produce, we hope, leaders of the future, and they will be both men and women." The move was first discussed in 1899 and then again in 1985 and 2005. Mr. Hand said there was no intention to change the misunderstood motto, "Manners maketh man." He said it refers to every person, not man. It does not mean hold your knife and fork properly. It's actually a proverb that exists for at least 100 years by Wickham's time. He's not expressing himself in Latin or French. He's deliberately saying, "I'm an Englishman from an ordinary background." Well, that's the Belgarum's view on the news. And now we're going to have a letter from Westminster. Roz, please.
Yes, this time it's written by Flick Drummond, who's a Meon Valley MP. The government is now confident it will have vaccinated around 13 million people in the top four priority groups by the weekend. This is an incredible achievement and will lay the foundations for the country eventually moving out of lockdown and finally getting the better of this awful virus. There's still plenty to do, including keeping to the lockdown restrictions, but as the vaccination rollout moves on to other groups, like the over 70s and over 65s, more and more of those who really suffer from coronavirus will be protected. Early research indications are showing we will see a drop in transmission and pressure on our NHS, a drop as more people get the jabs. However, I understand we must remain cautious. No one wants to have another lockdown. Quite a lot is being made at the moment of COVID variants, excuse me, and how vaccines might or might not react. Please just ignore all this and go and get your jab when you're called. The experts remain confident the vaccines we have, including Oxford AstraZeneca, will stop serious illness, and this really is the most important aspect of this immunisation drive. We will be able to tweak the vaccine as more variants evolve to ensure we have the best protection. But we must remember this is a new virus and we have to learn how it behaves. As time goes on, we will get even better and we are going to do pretty well already. On World Cancer Day last week, I was also told that our two clinical commissioning groups, CCG, are treating more cancer patients despite the pandemic. South East Hampshire CCG saw a 9% increase in patients in its 63-day pathway for the disease last autumn when compared to 2019, and West Hampshire CCG recorded a 5% increase. This is very good news, and the message to take from it is that patients should make sure they go for their treatment. The NHS is undertaking other work than the COVID fight, as these excellent figures show. In Westminster this week, I spoke in the Armed Forces Bill about my work as chair of the South East Region for the Veterinaries Advisory and Pensions Commission before I became the MP for Meon Valley. I raised the issue of complaints from veterans taking too long to settle. I said the armed forces must not be frightened of complaints. An open and transparent organisation is a much happier one, and complaints must be taken seriously and dealt with quickly. I also spoke about Yemen, which is a special place for me because I was born there when my father was in the armed services. I am worried the UN said last week that it had indefinitely delayed the salvage operation off the coast of Yemen to avert an ecological disaster from the oil tanker FSO Safer, which holds roughly 48 million gallons of oil. The UN said a failure by the Houthis faction in the country to guarantee the salvage team safety in writing this was the reason I asked the minister for further information, and the government is talking to the Houthis to avoid a disaster that would potentially be bigger than the Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska in 1989.
Thank you. So we go on now to what's on in Winchester for the next week. And I'm tempted to say nothing, but it's not quite true. There is the Winchester Farmers Market on Sunday, the 14th of February. And there's something which is an online event, and it's headed The Best of Hampshire with BBC MasterChef winners Jane Devonshire and Shalina Permalew. It's on February the 17th, that's the Wednesday, at 7:30. And it's an online cookery and talk celebrating the best of Hampshire with those two MasterChef winners. It's on Facebook. It will cost £12.50 for device. And the remaining bit says here, join both renowned chefs live from their home kitchens for cooking demonstrations and discussion from the comfort of your own kitchen or any other room of your choice. It features a selection of local produce this evening and will show what Hampshire has to offer, with tips to bring fun and creativity to your home cooking. Watch, enjoy and contribute to the question and answer if you please. This event is streamed online via Zoom, and you can get to that event via the Hampshire Library's online website. Well, those were our regular weekly features. Before we move on to the general news, I know that many of you are eagerly waiting for the lighting up times. Week, the sun, if there's going to be any sun, will rise at about 7:30 a.m. and might set at about 5:15 p.m. So on to items of general news, with Ros starting us off, please.
Thank you. And I've got an item here which I thought starts us off in a nice positive way. And it's entitled Strictly Judge, yeah, Strictly Backs Awards. Strictly Come Dancing star Judge Craig Revel Horwood, latest celebrity to sign up to the Hampshire Hero Awards. He will be among the celebrity guests who will introduce the three categories in what is likely to prove one of the most amazing online events of the year. Craig, whose dancing career has taken him around the world, is the only judge to have been in all 18 series of the BBC Dance Show, and is sometimes accused of being a mean marker. But he's given the Hampshire Chronicle 10 out of 10 for staging the awards. Craig will be a host of the event, Simon Weston, CBE, and it will be screened later this summer. Very shortly now, the Hampshire Chronicle and its sister titles will be asking our readers to meet the people whom they think are most deserving of these awards.
Right, sorry about the pause there, I was taken off guard. Right, the next item is Cathedral Launches Musical Moments. Winchester Cathedral has launched a new initiative to teach children about music while schools are closed due to the pandemic. With many finding themselves learning and teaching from home again, the music department has produced Musical Moments, a series of videos offering fun activities to children aged between 5 and 10 years old. Starting from Monday, February the 1st, each weekly video will cover a new topic, primary national curriculum. The videos feature contributions from the cathedral's own musicians, voluntary choirs, and the choristers from Pilgrim School. The series will provide standalone lessons that bring together fun and rewarding music content that can be taught at home with no musical knowledge or equipment required. Children can learn to play music, how to sing their favourite songs, and discover different instruments in the orchestra. The first of these videos, led by Claudia Grimnell, assistant organist, provides a whistle-stop tour of the cathedral organ, its history and the many sounds it can make. Kate Downer, choirs officer at the cathedral, said, "We are delighted to bring musical moments to people across the nation. We know learning from home isn't easy, and we want to think of a way that we could support families and teachers alike during these periods of lockdown. As well as providing engaging musical content, the videos also promote creative well-being at home, encouraging children to identify a positive moment within the video that can be added to a jar of positivity, an initiative currently being used by teachers and families across the UK to encourage children to write daily contributions that have made them happy. The Reverend Canon Andy Trenier, precentor and sacrist, said, "Winchester Cathedral's music is internationally renowned, and we're fortunate to be able to share this in a way that supports parents to provide learning at home. The cathedral is in a unique position to make sure children have access to and are able to use our resources, including these fun and collaborative music videos. The videos will be uploaded to the website each week and will be shared across Twitter and Facebook on a Monday morning."
The next heading here is Council Makes Millions in Profit from Parking. Winchester City Council made millions of pounds in profit from parking last year. That is according to analysis by the RAC Foundation, which shows councils across the country are making hundreds of millions from parking activities. The Motoring Research Group is saying parking is quite a money spinner for some councils, but the local government association says any surplus is spent on essential transport projects. Winchester City Council made £3.75 million in profit from parking services in 2019 to 2020. But that was down 19% from £4.65 million the previous year and a 5% decrease from £3.94 million in 2015-16. Across England, council made a combined profit of £891 million from parking activities in the 2019-2020, down 5% from £934 million a year earlier. They received an income of £1 billion from their parking operations and spent £854 million running them. The figures show this, although interest payments or depreciation of assets such as car parks are not included. The surplus for the latest year was up from £750 million in 2015-18. No, I'm sorry, that's 2015-16. Parking management is quite a money spinner for the local authorities, and nationally it is a big business, said the RAC Foundation Director Steve Gooding. The surplus for 2019-2020 is down a little on the year before, which may in part reflect the impact of the first COVID lockdown, which traffic levels plummeted at the end of last March. The dip is likely to be much deeper for the current financial year, given the range of restrictions over the last 12 months and the government's current plea that we should all stay at home if we can. Going forward, there are likely to be many councils who are actually looking to cut parking charges as a way of encouraging more people to visit their high streets, which are fighting for survival. The analysis is based on data from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government. It reveals the vast majority of 338 council who return figures reported a surplus on their parking operations.
Ed. Local elections will go ahead across England in May of this year, but voters will have to bring their own pencil to mark the ballot paper under new coronavirus safety rules. The Cabinet Office confirmed that COVID secure polls would be held as planned, despite fears that the pandemic would lead to them being postponed again. These elections on May the 6th, dubbed Super Thursday, include Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and the electing of the Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire. In Winchester, it will include contests that should have been held last May. Under new rules, voters will have to wear face coverings inside polling stations and will be asked to bring their own pen or pencil to mark their ballot. And proxy voting rules, where someone is allowed to vote on somebody else's behalf, will be changed so that people who have to self-isolate can request an emergency proxy vote up to 5 p.m. on the polling day. The Cabinet Office says all nine priority groups, covering those aged 50 and over, are expected to have received the coronavirus vaccines by May, meaning that the government can commit with confidence to the polls going ahead. As a result, a bumper set of elections are due to be held across Great Britain on Super Thursday, May the 6th. Due to the delays last year, it is because every voter in Great Britain will be able to take part in at least one type of poll, making it the biggest event of its kind outside a general election. It will also be the first big electoral test for Sir Keir Starmer, since he became Labour leader in April 2020, and for Prime Minister Boris Johnson since his general election victory in December 2019. Cabinet Office Minister Chloe Smith said, "We are publishing a detailed plan to deliver May's elections in a safe and secure way. This is backed up by additional funding for councils and practical changes to electoral laws to help both voters and candidates. Democracy should not be cancelled because of COVID. More than ever, local people need to say as we build back better. And it's issues ranging from local roads to safer streets to the level of council tax. It will be the first big electoral test for Sir Keir Starmer since he became Labour leader and for Boris Johnson since his general election victory in 2019. As the government rolls out the vaccine to the most vulnerable, we will be able to leave lockdown and open our country up safely again. We will work with political parties to ensure that these important elections are free and fair." The Electoral Commission spokesman said, "It is an important democratic principle that elections should proceed as scheduled whenever possible. The electoral community has been preparing for COVID-safe elections since last March when the 2020 elections were postponed. Together we have taken steps to help everyone involved take part safely and confidentially. Safety measures such as face coverings, hand sanitizers and social distancing will be in place to make polling stations safe place to vote and to work, and we are sharing information with the voters so that they understand."
People of King Alfred's. Readers with long memories, especially former students of King Alfred College, the forerunner of Winchester University, will surely recall Marshall Rose, principal of the college from 1967 to 1984. He died on January the 30th, after a short illness at the age of 98. I certainly remember him. I worked at the college during his period as principal. He was dynamic, creative, bold and inspiring. He did more than anyone to lead the institution through stern, challenging times in the late 1970s, when higher education and teacher training were going through major reorganisation. Less ably led and less adaptable institutions in Southampton and Salisbury simply foundered. Not so King Alfred's. Under Marshall Rowe's guidance, King Alfred College successfully reinvented itself as a liberal arts college offering BA as well as BEd degrees and developed the firm foundations of what is now the innovative, research, active and highly respected University of Winchester. It is entirely fitted that the university library bears his name. As a scholar, Marshall was a specialist in drama and published important work in that field. In retirement, in Norfolk, he also wrote extensively about his local area, not least the wonderful artistic detail of Norwich Cathedral. Marshall Rowe's life and example impacted on so many former generations of former students and former academic staff whose careers he nurtured. He will be long remembered with enormous respect and admiration.
Sporting faces from Winchester. This is sort of a sporting memories piece. In the second of these series, Malcolm Clark continues looking into famous sportsmen who hail from Winchester, adding to last week's article about former Winchester College students who have gone on to become international cricket captains. He adds the fact that Johnny Clay, who attended Winchester College from 1911 to 1916 and played in one test for England against South Africa in 1935. He served in both World Wars and had three spells as Glamorgan captain, the most recent being in 1946. In 1948, Clay, at the age of 50, played a major part in Glamorgan winning the county championship for the first time, taking a total of 19 wickets for 145 runs in the two innings victories, which clinched the title, the second one being against Hampshire. The victory against Hampshire that clinched the title was achieved at Bournemouth, which also happened to be the same venue at which Hampshire clinched their titles of 1961 and 1973. Clay, in fact, took the final wicket against Hampshire, with Charles Knott trapped LBW. In addition to several prominent sportsmen were born in Winchester. Golfer Clive Clark finished third in the British Open of 1967, with Gary Player second, behind winner Roberto da Vincenzo and Jack Nicklaus. He also played in the Ryder Cup in 1973 and the Walker Cup in 1965. In football, former Southampton player Terry Payne, born in Winchester in 1939, was a member of England's World Cup winning squad in 1966, playing in their second group game. He suffered an injury in that game, which was a 2-0 win against Mexico at Wembley, with Ian Callaghan replacing him for the next match before Alan Ball was recalled for the remainder of the tournament and ran non-stop during the final itself and played a part in two of the goals that England scored. On the cricketing front, Winchester-born players include Ken Palmer, who played in one test match and umpired 22 more. Adding to this list, Hampshire Cricket Club players were at one point in their careers not too far off England selection, while fellow Hampshire player James Tomlinson was the leading wicket taker in the county championships in 2008. Malcolm added, I would like to say that my research I do for the Sporting Memories Group has great therapeutic value to me. I believe that it is particularly important to remain as positive as possible in the current climate. And I think that the research I do enhances my knowledge of sport, giving me an insight into the lives and lifestyles of sportsmen, helped connect past and present experiences, and has been good for my hormones.
This next item is headed, Technician Saves Dave the Emu on A32. A man has described catching an emu after it was running loose on the A32 as the weirdest day of his life. But it looks to be a happy ending for the bird, nicknamed Dave by the emergency services, writes Sam Hatherley. Winchester police officers warned motorists to drive slowly and keep an eye out for spotting the escape bird around 10 a.m. on Thursday morning on the A32 near Wickham Road. A spokesperson for Hampshire Constabulary at the time said, "Police are trying to engage and get the bird to safety." Fareham Police provided an update on Twitter at 2:20 p.m. after successfully catching the bird. An image was released showing the captured bird, with officers at the time not knowing who owned it or where it came from. Southampton man Drew Lee, a 23-year-old technician from motorbike dealership Destination Triumph Solent, said, "My boss came running into the shop saying, 'You're not going to believe this, but there's an emu on the road outside.' Staff at the shop, worried about a road accident taking place, managed to subdue the frightened bird, which is over 5 feet tall, and had since..." Mr. Lee managed to restrain Dave for around an hour before the police arrived on the scene. He described the dramatic scene of policemen transporting the bird to a local animal park with a blue light escort before its tranquilizers wore off. Drew was relieved to hear that the owner had come forward. "It's great news they found where it came from. I'd like to visit it one day." Duncan Bolton, curator of Birdworld in Farnham, said Dave had come around from the sedatives, describing him as a healthy, friendly bird. He said the owner had since got in touch after seeing media coverage of the bird and police in a flap.
Crash charge. A bus driver has been charged after a double-decker bus full of school children smashed into a railway bridge in Headbourne Worthy, causing the roof to be ripped off. Three children required surgery for potentially life-threatening injuries, while 12 others suffered minor injuries when the stagecoach bus heading for Henry Beaufort School crashed into a bridge on Wellhouse Lane on September the 10th year. Hampshire Police has now charged the driver with causing serious injury by dangerous driving and will appear in court in April. The Crown Prosecution Service, the CPS, is now seeking more detailed information from all of the injured children. Any parent who has a child who was injured is asked to contact the CPS with their child's name, a summary of the injuries and treatment, and copies of photos taken of injuries. Parents can email the information to OPREMOTE, I'll spell that, OPREMOTE, at hampshire.pnn.police.uk. Sorry, that's very complicated. Steve Bryan, MP, said, "This was a truly horrible day for a large number of students and their families, as well as those working at the school. I think many people will instinctively be pleased to hear this news, but it's important now to stand back and let the justice system run its course."
Next item is headed, Book on Campaign Against the M3 Link. The first book on the history of the battle to save Twyford Down has been published. The book chronicles the direct action campaign to stop the completion of the last section of the M3 between 1992 and 1994, writes Andrew Napier. Twyford Rising, subtitled Land and Young Activists, who camped on the down to try to stop construction. Although they failed, the campaign, along with subsequent ones such as Newbury, stopped the £1 billion road programme. Twyford Down is seen as the start of ecological direction, action that today has developed into the campaigns against climate change and the HS2 railway from London to Birmingham. The authors, Helen Bainon, who joined the Dongas tribe, and local campaigner Chris Gillam, have spoken to many of the people who took part and collected many photographs never published before. Ms. Bay, with both joy and grief. It reminds us still felt in the environmental movement today. When you look at what's happening with HS2, you can trace the roots of it back to Twyford. Councillor Gillam added, "This book has been a long time coming, but that time has allowed those of us who were caught up in the Twyford Rising, in the tragedies and the triumph, the personal cost and the exhilaration of action, the sense of loss, of beauty and gain of long friendships, to reflect maturity on what it all meant." The book has been produced by Sarson Press on Hyde Street, Winchester. October Books in Southampton is hosting an online event on February the 25th, and that email address simplified if you go to www.eventbrite, spelt event and then B-R-I-T-E, .co.uk. That's www.eventbrite.co.uk. And that should take you to the October Books online event. And if you want more information, see www.twyfordrising, that's all lowercase, no spaces, twyfordrising.org.
Hungary police officers have described the government's decision to deny them a level of priority for the COVID-19 vaccine rollout as baffling and a major blow in the fight against the virus. Zoe Wakefield, chair of the Hampshire Police Federation, said she and colleagues are furious following the government's vaccine snub, as her colleagues are being spat at, bitten and contracting the virus through their job. She said, "Police officers need protecting so they can protect the public." However, Health Secretary Matt Hancock told police officers on Monday, in no uncertain terms, that they will have to wait their turn to receive the COVID-19 vaccine and they will not be prioritised. Mr. Hancock told a press conference that officers will not be vaccinated until groups after 1 to 9, as deemed by the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, which means they will have to wait for the 32 million others to get their jab first. Ms. Wakefield said, "I am completely baffled and angry that the government are blatantly ignoring the need for police officers to be vaccinated in the next cohort. Do they not understand that vaccinating police officers will not only protect this essential emergency service, but also reduce the spread of infection? Some forces have sickness rates of 12%. This is not sustainable. Police officers are mixing with numerous people every day and are not able to socially distance in every situation. They're being spat at, bitten and contracting the virus through their job. Police officers have lost their lives due to the COVID-19. They need protecting so they can protect the public." The government decision to not prioritise police officers has come despite lobbying from the Police Federation, Chief Police Officers, the Met Commissioner and the College of Policing. And Prime Minister Boris Johnson said last month that police officers should be vaccinated as soon as possible, while Home Secretary Priti Patel told policing to get ready for officers to receive the vaccine. Hampshire Police Federation Secretary Gary Smith added, "Our members are angry that they are in the face of an invisible enemy, the first line of defence for the public, and they stand between the virus and public safety, upholding and enforcing the law. Yet they have been shunned." Here in Hampshire, just to have a couple of thousand vaccines for the high risk and vulnerable officers and staff would go some way in reassuring the public, reduce anxiety amongst cops, and help us fight this deadly virus. Mr. Hancock told the press conference, "We have ensured through the clinical advice that we've taken that the vaccine rollout goes through those who are most at risk first. So any police officer who is aged over 50 would be part of the initial rollout through the current groups down to what I call the JCV1 cohorts 1.
Cyclists beat lockdown blues with the charity rides. Two cyclists set themselves a challenge to beat the January lockdown blues and cycle 1,000 kilometres to raise money for charities. The duo, Ali Longman and Matt Neal, took on the mammoth mission to raise funds for Home Start Winchester and Cancer Research UK. The duo completed their Keep Calm and Pedal marathon at the end of January with a gentle 30k ride around their home in Sutton Scotney. And in doing so, they have shattered their initial fundraising goal of £1,000 and raised over £2,700 for the two charities. "We needed a New Year challenge and something to focus on," said Ali. "Last autumn should have been our wedding, and now we're just hoping it will go ahead this year. But that's all out of our control. The charities were easy to choose. My mum has been a volunteer for Home Start Winchester for many years, and they do such brilliant work with young families. Matt and I both had loving, stable childhoods, and that's what every child deserves. Tragically, Matt lost his mum to breast cancer 9 years ago, and that's something that should happen to no one. We're so pleased to have completed this challenge, really, and really grateful for the amazing support. And we'll probably take a break from cycling for a few days," she laughed. A spokesman from Home Start Winchester called the ride a wonderful start to the year. They added, "We know how fundraising will be difficult this year, but when we move out of lockdown, the demand for our services is likely to be greater than ever. Huge congratulations to Ali and Matt, and thank you so much." Matt's IT business, Ellie Tech Solutions, has doubled the sponsorship raised on the couple's fundraising page. To donate, go to www.uk.virginmoneygiving.com, and that is a fundraising website, so it's www.uk.virginmoneygiving, and that's all lowercase, no spaces, .com. And good luck. That was a wonderful wonderful charity deal.
Final news item in this week's version. Complaints over sex education. It's another piece about Winchester College, interestingly. Winchester College has been accused of promoting underage sex after boys aged 13 and 14 were told that they will not be prosecuted for having consensual intercourse. Some parents at the boarding school are furious that their sons in years 9 and 10 were told that the age of consent is not there to punish young people for having consensual sex. The pupils were given a virtual lesson on relationships, sex and health education last week by Dr. Eleanor Drager from the organisation It Happens. The Telegraph reports that Dr. Drager told the boys that in a happy, healthy relationship where you both want to have sex and you both have sex, you are unlikely to be prosecuted from that because it's not in the public interest. Dr. Drager went on to say that if you are 14 and you have sex with a 19-year-old teacher, the teacher would be prosecuted, adding, so the age of consent is not there to prosecute or punish young people for having consensual sex. Having sex with anyone under the age of consent is a criminal offence, even for people who are also under 16. Dr. Drager also said that biology isn't binary, during a discussion about male and female chromosomes. Several parents are understood to have written to the school to complain that the lesson was inappropriate. A spokesman for Winchester College said they believed the section of the talk about age of consent had been taken out of context. They added, it happens, our members of the PSHE Association. Their content was in line with both NHS and WHO guidance. Well, that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Liz LeGrice is the person to call if you have any problems with the recording. Please telephone the contact number. It is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. We should also offer a sincere vote of thanks to ourselves for editing this week's edition. And, of course, many thanks to Roz for joining me in presenting the Hampshire Chronicle this week. When you finish recording, listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope, also putting your address label inside the envelope, and pop it in the post. There's no stamp required. And the address label will ensure that it is returned to us at our new address in Twyford. And so, from Roz...
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard, goodbye.